This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
A clear lesson from the geological record is one of dynamism, which reveals that the Antarctic ice sheet is not a static giant frozen in time, but rather that it responds sporadically and unpredictably to large-scale environmental change. A lesson we should learn as Antarctica's environment is changed further because of fossil fuel burning.
Extreme weather events are reported all over the world. Can they hit Antarctica as well? Did you know the biggest recorded heat wave, as a sudden rise in temperature, happened near the South Pole? How fragile is Antarctica? We have first answers in a new paper titled Antarctic Extreme Events. The lead author is Dr. Martin Siegert, professor at Grantham Institute for Climate Change and Imperial College London. He is a glaciologist and world-recognized Antarctic scholar. From the UK, Martin Siegert, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Pleasure to be here.
Even a dozen years ago, Martin, many ice experts discounted most of Antarctica from any serious change in the next 1,000 years. Now we have to toss out those old assumptions?
Yeah, I think I'd probably count myself among those glaciologists that maybe if by 2010 we were thinking that the Antarctic ice sheet was this amazing place full of interesting things to discover, of course, fascinating from the perspective of it being a region isolated from the rest of the planet, captured in time, sort of unchanged, largely for at least 14 million years. And that was the sort of evidence that we were coming to terms with from what we could gather. But, of course, that's not the case now. We've learned from the geological record, but also from events that are happening right now, right in front of us, that, in fact, Antarctica is subject to a lot of change, a lot of extreme things occur in Antarctica that we've been surprised about. And unfortunately, some of those things are very much linked to wider global heating issues relating to the burning of fossil fuels.
I know this summer European cities went from cold to punishing heat, and then some streets turned to instant rivers in record rain. Can such rapid changes happen in the cold house we find at the Southern Pole?
Well, they have been. Of course, we've become accustomed to, sadly, to extreme events, and we've seen those all over the world. There doesn't seem to be any place that humans inhabit that isn't subject to extreme weather conditions one way or another, and that can manifest as droughts, it can manifest as extreme heating conditions, and that can lead to wildfires. We've seen extreme flooding events often over areas of land that are already dry, and so you get huge flash flooding that occurs as a result. And all those things, sadly, contribute to the loss of livelihoods and, very sadly, to the loss of lives. And it doesn't really matter if you're in the developed countries or a country that has got a fully developed and rich economy. This is still affecting people's lives and livelihoods, and we should be very concerned about it. The question we put to ourselves was, is Antarctica subject to extreme events as well? And the most obvious extreme events are weather events, not alone weather events. There are other events that occur in Antarctica that we'd like to capture in our understanding of extreme things that happen in Antarctica. But, of course, the world's largest ever heat wave happened in March in 2022, where the temperatures in East Antarctica, that should have been something like minus 50 degrees centigrade, turned out to be more like minus 10 degrees centigrade. It's a jump above the norm of about 38 degrees centigrade, which is utterly unheard of. We've had some very hot weather in Europe this year, and, of course, last year in London, for the first time ever, and in many other parts of the United Kingdom, the temperature rose above 40 degrees centigrade. Now that will be a shift from the normal midsummer of about 17 degrees, usually about 23 degrees, so getting to 40 is about 17 degrees. Well, you know, 38 degrees temperature shift in Antarctica is phenomenal. If we'd have had something like that in London, it would have been 60 degrees centigrade, which, of course, would have been colossal. So yes, Antarctica is subject to extreme conditions. These are things that we hadn't noticed before, not because we hadn't been looking, but because they hadn't been occurring. And so we're deeply concerned about that. There are some other things which are not necessarily weather-induced, but are definitely global heating-induced, and that is right at this moment the extreme loss of Antarctic sea ice that should be growing around this time of year. It's winter in Antarctica, and for throughout this winter in Antarctica, the sea ice in many places just hasn't been forming in ways which we've never seen before, the lowest ever recorded sea ice growth phase in Antarctica, with significant consequences for the rest of the planet.
What are some of those consequences? Why does it matter if the sea ice plunges around Antarctica? I mean, it doesn't directly add to sea level rise.
Absolutely. It contributes nothing directly to sea level. But there are a couple of things we are deeply concerned about, one of which does relate to sea level, which I'll come on to. But the first, if we look at the Arctic in the north, the sea ice there has been retreating fairly steadily since the 1970s. And what we've recorded in the Arctic is this replacement of a very bright reflecting surface, which is the snow and ice, by a very dark absorbing surface. So ordinarily, snow and ice, the solar radiation that beams down on it gets reflected back out into space. And so the Earth does not heat up as a consequence of having that snow and ice on its surface. But if it's not there anymore and it's replaced by a dark ocean or dark land, then the sun's radiation gets absorbed by the ocean or by the land, and further heating results. We've seen that in the Arctic, and which is why the Arctic region is warming at around about four times the rate of the rest of the planet. So the Arctic is no longer acting to cool the planet. It's actually doing the reverse. It's accelerating warming on our planet. But the Antarctic hasn't been like that traditionally. So up until 2017, we've actually been seeing Antarctic sea ice grow, which has done us a wonderful sort of ecosystem favor by bouncing all that solar radiation back out into space. But since 2017, year on year, we've seen less and less sea ice. And what we're very concerned about is that the Antarctic is now starting to behave much like the Arctic has done for the last 30, 40, 50 years. And that is, we start losing the ice. The loss of ice leads to further warming because of the absorption of solar radiation, and that leads in turn even less ice and so on. So there's a feedback process that results. If through time, so the next 10, 20 or so years, Antarctica really starts behaving like the Arctic and starts contributing to accelerated global warming, then neither of the polar regions will be acting in our favor to cool the planet, and both will be trying to heat it. And that's why there'll be an acceleration in global warming as a consequence of that process. So we're very concerned about that. The additional reason we're concerned is because of the knock-on consequence of heating in the Antarctic to the sustainability and survival of the massive slabs of ice which are floating around Antarctica that are formed by the grounded ice, the ice sheets. And those massive slabs of ice are called ice shelves. They act to essentially hold back the grounded ice from flowing into the ocean. Now, we know that some of these ice shelves have broken up catastrophically in the past, but there are many ice shelves around Antarctica that haven't yet disintegrated. But if they did, then we would see an acceleration of grounded ice flow from the continent into the ocean. You see, you don't need to melt the ice to cause sea level rise. All you need to do is to push it into the ocean. And under Archimedes' principle, it displaces its own weight in water, and the sea level goes up. You know, it can take 1,000 years to melt a big iceberg. It doesn't matter. Sea level has already happened instantly by virtue of it being in the water. So how does an ice shelf become unstable? Well, it can do that if the temperature, the ocean, and the atmospheric temperature around it starts to warm up. So losing Antarctic sea ice is bad for the planet in terms of accelerated global warming, but it could be really bad for the planet in terms of activating the Antarctic ice sheet to contribute much more to global sea level rise than it has done historically.
Well, speaking of feedback loops, strangely, one of the new worries addressed in your new paper is the impact of more land appearing as ice retreats. We would have thought that would be a good thing. How could that affect warming?
Well, for exactly the same reason. So if the land is covered by snow, then what will happen is that the solar radiation will be bounced back off it. But if that is exposing rock and soil, then that will heat up. The other reason that is a concern is because of the occurrence of avian species to plants and maybe even insects in some parts of the northern part of the Antarctic Peninsula, being able to colonize that exposed land in ways that hasn't been possible traditionally. And what we're really concerned about is some avian species being able to colonize the area much more quickly than a native species, simply by virtue of the native species not being particularly good at surviving warm conditions. And if you warm the Antarctic Peninsula up, it might be better suited to plants that at the moment don't normally survive in those regions. So that's another sort of ecological biodiversity issue.
A recent EcoShock guest explained part of Greenland was last exposed to sunlight around 400,000 years ago. When was the last time Antarctica had significant melting and ice loss?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, you know, if you were asking me this question maybe 25, 30 years ago, there were two schools of thought, and they were completely opposing schools of thought, and there was a big debate in the scientific literature. One postulated that just 3 million years ago, in a period called the Pliocene, pretty much the whole of the ice was lost. It was all gone. And there was another side that said, oh, no, the Antarctic ice sheet has largely been unchanged for about the last at least 14 million years. And there was sort of evidence on both sides of this argument, probably more for the latter than the former, I should say. But there was some evidence for all of that. What we're beginning to learn now as we appreciate the dynamism of the Antarctic ice sheet is that you don't need to collapse the whole ice sheet to answer some of the questions that sort of former hypothesis had. And at the same time, it's just not right to consider Antarctica not changing at all when it stands to reason that if the world's temperature changes, so with the Antarctic ice sheet. And what we've come to appreciate, and it's fairly settled now in the scientific literature, is that in the Pliocene, 3 million years ago, the Antarctic ice sheet in places was less big than it is at the moment. But was still there, persistent in some places, in many places. But the loss of Antarctic ice in the Pliocene 3 or so million years ago led to occasionally the sea level then being over 20 meters higher than it is today. And that's the enormous thing about the Antarctic ice sheet that we must be aware of. And, you know, I studied the Antarctic ice sheet because it's very interesting scientifically. But there's an important reason why society needs to understand it as well. And that is because it's a colossal store of water, ice, that currently lies above the level of the ocean. And as it melts and as it moves into the ocean, we will start to see global sea level rise. You know, there are 300,000 glaciers all around the planet, right, apart from Greenland and the Antarctic ice sheet. And if all those glaciers melted, but Greenland and Antarctic ice sheet didn't melt, then the global sea level that would occur would be somewhere between 25 to 30 centimeters. That's all it would be, which is bad, right? But that's all it would be. There's enough ice held in the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheet to raise sea level by over 60 meters. Now, that'd be terrible, of course, and it would take thousands of years to do. But actually, you don't need 60 meters to cause us, our society, a problem. 1 meter will be really bad news. 5 meters will be a tragedy. Many low-lying Pacific nations and ports and cities and things. And I've got to tell you that under a high level of warming, it is possible for the ice sheets, Greenland and Antarctica, to respond in this accelerated way such that by this century, we could have 1.5 meters, maybe 2 meters of sea level rise, and by the middle of next century, 3 to 5 meters of sea level rise. And that's if we don't stop burning fossil fuels. So we can do something about that now. Take us away from a sort of strong warming future and save ourselves from this colossal problem. But if we don't do it, then we're stacking up problems for our children and those that come afterwards, because once these ice sheets start to become dynamic, once they start to flow into the ocean, once they start to melt, there will be very little we can do to stop it.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Antarctic expert and Professor Martin Siegert. Your extreme study for Antarctica, it's not just about ice. Tell us about the perils you found encountered by living things in a changing Antarctica.
Yes, indeed. So we can talk about the sea ice as well. So sea ice is a very important substance for marine mammals, so seals and penguins and things. And if the sea ice starts to retreat, then the habitat in which those animals can survive becomes less and less. So that's a bad thing. We can talk about as it starts to rain in Antarctica, and unfortunately, you know, 30 years ago, you would never be talking about raining in Antarctica, but it can happen now. And for chicks, penguin chicks, they've been evolved to never experience rain events, and their feathers just aren't equipped to be able to do it. So they survive with these fluffy feathers, for pretty cold conditions, but dry conditions. And unfortunately, as it starts to rain, these chicks get wet. And if a cold event happens while they're still wet, then that wetness turns to ice, and these chicks will perish. And we're starting to see the loss of tens of thousands of penguin chicks as a consequence of rain events and warming, and as a consequence of the reduction in sea ice. So that's a deep concern. But, you know, it's nothing new. So that's a global warming issue and a burning of fossil fuels issue. But we can look back 100 or so years to another oil boom, and that wasn't oil and gas from the ground, but it was oil extracted from whales. And we virtually hunted humpback whales and blue whales to near extinction simply to try to get the oil from them. So humans and our fixation, we're completely hooked like a drug on oil, on fossil fuels now, but oil. And it's caused us to do awful things to our planet. Firstly, with the near extinction of very large marine mammals and whales, and more recently, the huge ecological and climate damage that we're doing at the moment. And we know if we stop whaling, those whale numbers came back, and that's great. It took a lot of time for that to happen. But it does tell us that once we stop and mend our ways and think about living on our planet in a sustainable way, things can be repaired, and that's what we're hoping with the climate problem as well.
Looking at new mechanisms in Greenland, we find the role of sudden ponds, torrents of water running deep into the glaciers, unexpected fragility to that whole massive ice structure. Do you see similar large-scale threats in ice stability in Antarctica?
Yeah, so we haven't at the moment. So in Greenland, you get these enormous ponds of water on the surface, and they find themselves through holes in the ice, and they get down to the bed of the ice sheet, and it can cause the base of the ice to become lubricated and to flow more quickly. And so that's been known about for some time. Quite a lot of research has been done on that. We've never seen that happen in Antarctica, but what we are starting to see is the ponding of water, much more than we had done some decades ago. And so the first element of Antarctica to becoming a little bit more like Greenland, we're starting to see that with the ponding of water. Of course, ice shelf disintegration, the floating slabs of ice that break up, can break up really quickly. That happens as a consequence of this process, and we've known that, and we've seen it on a number of ice shelves, large and small, all around the Antarctic continent, because of ponded water and that water finding its way down through the slab of ice to the water underneath. And once a hole gets punctured into the ice shelf, then the sort of structural integrity of the ice gets compromised. And as it happens repeatedly, then the whole ice shelf becomes useless as a way of maintaining itself and just breaks up catastrophically. So that's the process that we've known about. We can see it happening in some ice shelves, and there's been examples of it, and we're deeply concerned as more ice shelves get exposed to surface melting that this can happen elsewhere in Antarctica.
One of the most frightening recent interviews on this program was about changes to ocean currents in the Southern Ocean and especially around Antarctica. That was with Dr. Matthew England. Was ocean change included in your study?
Yes, it was. We've seen marine heat waves happen in Antarctica. The problem with working in the ocean in Antarctica is a problem of data sparsity. You know, we just don't have an awful lot of measurements and observations. The Southern Ocean is vast. And we have some measurements, but nowhere near enough. There was a very good international arrangement of Southern Ocean observations, and that's fantastic, but we need an awful lot more. But we have had recorded evidence of multiple marine heat waves in Antarctica. Unlike the Arctic, the Antarctic Ocean, the Southern Ocean, is very mixed, it's very dynamic, and it's quite complicated to understand in a predictive kind of way. The Arctic is much more simple. You know, it's a pretty static ocean. There's not a lot of connection with it and the rest of the planet. But the Southern Ocean is very well coupled to ocean water elsewhere. And that's important because as the Southern Ocean changes, it can have an influence on the flow of water around the world, which is why as Antarctica changes, it impacts the Southern Ocean, and the impact of the Southern Ocean on ocean flows elsewhere will cause, of course, the transfer of heat around our planet to be changed, as Matt England would have told you about in your previous conversation.
Also on this program, Dr. Tim Lenton warned of cascading tipping points that could shift world climate in unexpected ways. What do we know about Antarctic tipping points, their proximity, and potential risks?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I've had quite a few conversations with Tim and others about what we're seeing in Antarctica and whether those are actually tipping points, i.e. moving to a completely new state, or whether they are just positive feedbacks that we're starting to see. I mean, the positive feedback not being in a good sense, the positive feedback being in an accelerated, amplified sense. We are definitely seeing those. I'm not sure that we're quite ready to talk about Antarctica being tipped into a new regime quite yet.
And what did you and your 13 co-authors find as extreme interactions between the polar atmosphere and the ice?
Well, of course, an obvious one is a lack of ozone that we've known about for some time, and hopefully the repairing of that, the cover through carbons that were plentiful and used all the time in refrigeration systems. There was a ready, cheap replacement for those, and so the Madrid Protocol that banned the use of CFCs was so well received and effective because there was a ready alternative to it. So it just shows you what can be done if that alternative can be found. But of course, what we're seeing from an atmospheric sense is much more dynamism, and that heat wave that we were referring to earlier, 38 degrees, was a phenomenal event that happened in Antarctica. Usually what happens with weather systems is they wrap around clockwise around Antarctica by virtue of the polar vortex, very high atmospheric river of fast flowing air, and also the orography of the continent itself. It's the highest continent by quite a long way on the planet, just because of the massive ice sheet that is, you know, in some places above 4 kilometers above sea level, and in many places above 2.5 kilometers above sea level. This kind of stops these storms from coming in. But what happened in March into 2022 was phenomenal. This jet, this river of atmospheric flows, essentially from Australia, ripping through and across the Southern Ocean and onto the Antarctic continent in ways we've just never seen before. And it was that very warm, moist air that caused the heat wave. And we're still trying to understand how that was possible, whether that was truly a complete freak, or because we're starting to see extreme events and in all realms in Antarctica right now, whether that too is associated with the burning of fossil fuels. And I think it's probably fair to argue at this stage that the fingers are pointing at global heating and the enhanced dynamism in our atmosphere as a consequence of that, which probably caused that heat event. In fact, there's a paper that's come out very recently that attributes that extreme event to the burning of fossil fuels.
Given the latest reports of fragile states at both poles, the 1 meter sea level rise by 2100 estimated by the IPCC sounds very low, very optimistic. If there is more, the risk to coastal cities and agricultural deltas could be catastrophic. After your review, what do you think?
Yeah, so in 2020, I and some colleagues wrote a paper about potential sea level rise in a preemptive investigation, because we were aware that the IPCC report was essentially saying those things, that about a meter, maximum of a meter by the century. Well, that is what is regarded as being an unlikely outcome, and that's likely in terms of the ice sheet response to global warming, but also the likely global warming that will result under different scenarios. And what we were very concerned about was what would happen to Greenland and Antarctica under extreme global warming, which, by the way, is the sort of track that we're on at the moment. And when you look at those extreme conditions, it turns out that the confidence that we have in sea level rise being about a meter by 2100 is around about 66%. Well, that means there's a 1 in 3 chance of it being outside of that range, and there's virtually no chance of it being less than like half a meter. So the 1 in 3 chance will be higher than 1 meter, and we wanted to point that out to everybody because it might seem unlikely, but you can't discount it from happening, especially under a strong warming future, which, as I said, is like the track that we're on at the moment. Whether you believe or whether you want to understand that and accept it or not doesn't actually matter too much, because 2100 is just an arbitrary time. So we're worried about sea level rise, not necessarily just at 2100, because that's a bit of an arbitrary number. What we're worried about is the trajectory of sea level rise and where it's going. And in all scenarios, it keeps going up into next century and beyond. So it is possible for there to be at least 1 meter of sea level rise this century. It could be more. But by 2150, say, it'll be further sea level rise and maybe somewhere between 3 to 5 meters. And it keeps going after that. The problem is this is a direct consequence of burning fossil fuels. And we are activating, mobilizing the Antarctic ice sheet and indeed the Greenland ice sheet to respond in this way. Once we activate it, once we provoke Antarctica and Greenland to start losing ice, it will be very difficult to stop it again. And so we are causing now massive problems for our future, for our children's future, and for many generations that come after them. We are behaving in a very irresponsible way for the future of our planet, and we're doing it knowingly and willingly, and we really must stop that, because we want to live on this planet in a healthy, happy way that allows us to fulfill our ambitions, but also we want our children and those that come after to be able to have the same privilege, and we're disallowing them from doing that right now because of the actions we're taking.
Yes, the study points again and again to fundamental questions we need answered, not about other planets, but one of the seven great continents on this one. Martin Siegert, what would you tell governments, and what are you working on next?
Yes, so there are many things about Antarctica that's fascinating and we want to do. So one thing I really want to achieve for the benefit of climate science and our ability to predict sea level rise much better than we are at the moment is a systematic geophysical survey of the Greenland and the Antarctic ice sheets. You might imagine that we'd have done that already. You know, we've systematically mapped the surface of Mars, for example, but we've never done that to the Antarctic ice sheet base. But that information is fundamental to models of ice sheet flow and therefore for prediction of global sea level. So it is something that is missing. We have a rudimentary understanding of what's underneath the ice, but not in an optimized way, optimized for the use of modeling. And so we urgently need that, and me and quite a few other people are starting to contemplate how we go about providing that survey and offering it to everybody, because it's urgently needed for future generations to understand how sea level is going to go up. But when I was speaking to decision makers and politicians, well, I stopped talking about global heating, because it feels when you do that global warming and global heating is the cause. It isn't. The cause is burning fossil fuels. And we absolutely must transition to net zero as quickly as we possibly can by mid-century in the next 30 years. And then that gives us a chance. It gives us a chance to restricting global warming to 1.5 degrees, so that's another 0.3 degrees above where we are at the moment, and to maintaining the sanctity, the preservation of the Antarctic continent and the Greenland ice sheets, of course, in some way. Because if we don't do those things, then those ice sheets are lost, and for many generations after us, they'll feel the consequences.
From the Grantham Institute for Climate Change and Imperial College London, we've been speaking with Professor Martin Siegert. You can find links to the new paper, Antarctic Extreme Events. It's free access. It's in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Martin Siegert, thank you for sharing your time with our listeners.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.